numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly, and I do mean filled with pride. Proudly brought to you by BetMGM's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. How you doing, Kelly? I haven't heard much from you. Okay, man?
I'm doing well.
All right, just checking out.
Doing well.
Still getting over that draw yesterday, USA?
Shoot it!
Which remains a great hockey strategy. I don't know if that's the case in soccer. I love that. Shoot it! Still to come this hour, we will talk baseball here with Mark Borchardt momentarily, but also college football, in-game college football betting with Todd Wishnev from his mom's cork attic in Pittsburgh, PA. Don't let the smooth taste fool you. He is the most successful in-game college basketball bettor I know. The man is he's a walking computer when it comes to figuring out pace and that sort of thing. Possessions in college basketball. We'll talk to him about college football in-game betting, which, as I have always said about college football in-game betting, no sport reveals itself as quickly in any game as college football does. You can figure out a team's just going to blow the other off the field or neither team's going to stop the other on defense. So we'll take that into consideration. We'll talk to Todd about that. And Chrissy Andrews, my mishpucha in studio, who runs the South Point Hotel Casino Sportsbook right behind us, or in Kelly's case, where he looks gazes past me into the screens into.
Yeah, get out of the way. The Timberwolves from the early...
Pistons,
what era are we on?
This is a Pistons-T-Wolves game on NBA TV.
Shoot it, Chauncey!
Bison DeLay is playing in this game. The late Bison DeLay, formerly Brian Williams. I have no idea why they're showing. Something must have happened in this game.
4x3, so this goes back a couple decades.
Oh, Flip Saunders is really getting excited, though. Anyway, there's that going on. Let's talk some baseball. Mark Borchardt joins us at BaseWinner.com, at BaseWinner, the BaseWinner podcast, from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing good. It's kind of an exciting day here to see if there's going to be an impactful trade here. It might be happening here in the next couple hours. So
who is, because we've talked about this, it's almost like, you know, the biggest names, right? Shohei and the Blake Snells of the world, which, again, on this show, we didn't think we're ever going to get traded, and neither are, it appears, or Josh Hader. But what's like, obviously Scherzer went to the Rangers. Is Verlander the biggest remaining name out there, or what would move the needle for you right now?
Yeah, I mean, a Verlander trade would definitely help a team like Baltimore. Obviously, it would help Houston out a little bit. You know, the one thing that I can say is that I think it's going to be difficult with his no trade structure and his contract structure. They may have a challenge just from a financial standpoint. But I think that, you know, the biggest headline was Scherzer. But I think what we don't realize is, like, Scherzer has not been vintage Max Scherzer this year. So how much does it affect Texas? Obviously helped them. He's still better than average and better than their number five guy. So it helps him a little bit. But I still think, you know, that Houston Astros team is going to win that division.
Okay, well, you just
filed them out.
You already beat me to the punch, because I'll make the case that the biggest move, you know, obviously they got Lucas Giolito as well, but the biggest move was keeping Shohei. Obviously answering that somewhat, you know, cleverly. But here it is now. The Angels are 4.5 out of the lead. Houston, the aforementioned Astros, just a half game out of the American League West standings. But here's the thing. The Angels, I know Will Hill told me he got it at 30-1 the other day. We were talking about it at 20-1 yesterday. They're 18-1. They're still a huge long shot to win the division, 4.5 out behind both the Rangers and the Astros. 18-1. We're showing 20-1 at DraftKings, but I think I saw 18-1 just now. You don't want any part of that?
Well, they're at 25-1 at Caesars here in Arizona. I've got them 4.5% of the time to win that division. So that should be plus 2147. So just a little bit of value at 25-1, but that's about as little as you get there. So
what is it inherent in your numbers that makes it so?
Well, there's probably a lot that goes in. There's a lot that goes into it. It's pretty much like their bullpen is like 21st in baseball. Starting pitchers outside of Shohei aren't, you know, tremendously awesome. The lineup is good, but, you know, you look at like between the fifth and the eighth lineup in baseball with you know, after after Shohei averaged starting pitching, and then you have a bullpen that, you know, that they got a nice piece with Lopez. It brought him from, in my ratings, from 28th to 21st. But I mean, they still struggle there. I mean, they you know, they don't have the in my opinion, by my numbers, I don't think their bullpen is the elite bullpen that you need to win a division and go deep in the playoffs. You know, Estevez and Lopez are nice, but then they got Matt Moore, Webb, Soriano, Loop, and Jaime Barrio. Like, why is this guy on a major league team?
Yeah, it's really true.
My 2 cents. Yeah, he should be Jaime Barista. He should be doing Starbucks barista over there.
Yeah, you have an underbelly of bullpens when you do your analysis. You call it the underbelly, and I don't know what he would represent. Something below the underbelly. Let me ask you about the Orioles. The Orioles, the team, I grew up loving the Orioles. They were the team in D.C. when there was no Senators and there was no Nationals in between. And so that was the team we grew up on. They were one of the great franchises in baseball in the 70s and 80s, the Orioles way. They had a flare-up in the late 90s when they had a bunch of free agents like Roberto Alomar. They paid for some players in Peter Angelos' first year. And they've only made the postseason, you know, once in a blue moon since. But they've really stunk these last years. And now all of their prospects, or their best prospects, are now manifesting. They have the best record in the American League. They have a 1.5-game lead over the Rays. We know what a huge difference it is, especially in baseball, of winning the division versus not winning it. You go from that first round bye to having to play a best of three. Like, it couldn't be any more of a stark, you know, contrast unless you were playing a single elimination. So here they are. They haven't been, you know, they haven't had treated their fans of these kinds of postseasons. It's almost like, it almost feels like they're playing for a dynasty by not trading some of their great farm system that remains. Do you think they make a move today?
Maybe. I don't know. I think they need a starting pitcher, Gil. I mean,
they
you,
do.
You look at,
yes.
You look at Kramer, you look at Gibson, and they're both below average, by the way I rate it, with strikeout percentage, walk percentage, ground ball rate. Rodriguez and Bradish has been really good. So they could really be helped out by, even if they get a guy who's like a, you know, maybe not an elite pitcher, but maybe like a 10% better than average pitcher, it would certainly help them. So I personally, as a fan of the game, I'd like to see them make a move. I'd like to see them be relevant in the postseason. You know, one of the concerning things, and I'll just wrap it up with this because I know we're kind of up against it. Cano, Yennier Cano, it was a 1-2 punch with Cano and Bautista. And if you look at Bautista, 51.3 strikeout percentage last 150 plate appearances. That's tremendous. But Cano's dropped. He's only 20% strikeout rate last 150 plate appearances. So maybe they're not going to have the 1-2 punch. Maybe it's going to be Bautista back there. So that could be impactful when you talk about late season, you know, positioning and postseason play.
Yeah, I was conflicted because I love the team. I was, you know, don't get rid of one of your 10 best remaining. You know, if you trade a 10 to 20 prospect as opposed to one of your top 10, make a move. But now I'm not so sure. Now I just think it feels like they're playing for this long-term dynasty as opposed to this year. And I'm just like, okay, let's, because I think the Rays win the division as currently constituted. I really do. I could be wrong in the end, but I'm
with you, Gil. I've got them at minus. They should be minus 150 to win the division. They got better starting pitching. The bullpen's really kind of they've got rid of a couple guys, and that bullpen's really good now. Top five in baseball.
All right, we'll see. The MLB deadline today, here just 5 hours away. So we'll see what happens. Okay, as far as today's slate of games, what do you have, sir?
It's kind of a tight card, Gil. The one that kind of stuck out to me is Pablo Lopez and Miles Mikolas, and I think that there's a vast difference between both pitchers. Minnesota's only minus 116 in the market against St. Louis, and I think St. Louis is I think they signaled to everybody that they're looking to next year. Better luck next year. Well, Minnesota at minus 116 to me is a good play. And then I went base winner parlay. Spencer Strider, Framber Valdez, first five, risk a unit to win 1.23 units. You got, I mean, two tremendous pitchers. Teams' offenses are better. As I like the Angels' offense. They're seventh in baseball, but the Braves are so good. They've got a projected 137 base winner weighted runs created plus, and it's better than the next team by about 17 points. It's the depth of that offense is just, I mean, it's hard to fathom, really. Of course, Spencer Strider, you know, he's going to be the Cy Young winner. He should be.
I hope so. But you know what? It's like he gets left in games just a little too long, and he's still got a 3.73 ERA. I wonder. You know, you and I don't care as much about ERA, but I still think the voters do. So worries.
Yeah, well, you make a good point. Maybe they're realizing that, hey, you know, maybe not keep him in the seventh inning. And there's a big difference between his sixth inning stats and his seventh inning stats. Mm-hmm. I was looking at that, trying to make the decision on whether I was going to go full game or half game today. And I decided to go first five. I just, gosh, that guy's good. He's the best I've seen personally since Randy Johnson.
I don't think I disagree with that. I mean, that's a pretty bold statement, but I'm not sure I disagree with that at all. So just to review, the parlay is the Braves and who?
Braves and Astros with Framber Valdez. And Framber's kind of been shaky at times this year, but his home numbers are really good. He's like a different pitcher at home against Cleveland. And I think Cleveland, talk about teams giving up. I think they said, hey, we're going to get Noah Syndergaard and give away Savale. If that doesn't say surrender, I don't know what does.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think that team's, you know, that's a good bet against, bet the Twins to win that division, bet the Cleveland season win total under. And today, bet the Houston Astros first five part of the base winner parlay.
The first five Astros Braves parlay. And the pick before that again was the...
The Twins. Minus 116 full game, okay. And then the parlay is the Braves first five, Astros first five.
Yeah, Guardians. A lot of people here had the Guardians to win this division, and we're waiting like any day now. Guardians, whatever you want to overtake the Twins, and it has never.
Well, you guys got Syndergaard, man. He pitched five good innings yesterday.
Oh, stop it, Syndergaard. Thank you, Mark. Always a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Skill.
Mark Borchardt, basewinner.com, at basewinner. Todd Wishnev in the house from his mom's Cork Attic. College football in-game betting. Some tenets to keep in mind. That's next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game proudly brought to you by BetMGM. Don't forget, though, whenever you're out there, we all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? Drive too fast and you can hear the sound of your vehicle crashing, because one way or another, speeding catches up with you. That's paid for by NHTSA. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Robert at RobertB01, he says, looking forward to Gil's top 10 sushi bars restaurant on today's show. Oh, Humans did his fast food. 50 this morning.
Yep. Rankings are out.
Robert wants my top 10 sushi. How anticipated do you think number one would be on that list?
You should just do top 10 and leave one blank.
You could do 10 through 2.
Just a question
10 through
mark.
2 and then walk off. People be like, I hate you. Let's see here. Kevin at Clone. I won't even read that. Boys, instead of calling them tweets now, should it be called X-Crete? See what he does? Like this, he wrote it like the island Crete, though. He said, we got X-Cretes. I can't take credit for this. Saw it a comment last night. That is very clever. Jason H11, I never thought I'd hear Women's Soccer America and shoot it in the same sentence. Kelly, you are one of a kind.
Shoot it!
let's see.
Too much dribbling.
Z free. I was looking for a black X or Z tweet thingy, but didn't see any. Got any tennis plays today? I did. I think there's one left, and I think one got canceled. Like, I can't even keep up anymore when I'm doing the show, because like one of them in DC, apparently somebody already withdrew before the match started. Then there's one that was supposed to happen, and I don't understand if it's happening anymore. So I don't even know if we have tennis picks left.
Do you have anything going in Europe or anything?
We did, but they're all done. So.
That makes sense.
I can't even answer the question. I mean, I apologize for that, but it's such a weird weather slash whatever kind of time. Ian McDonald. Oh, I said Tommy Chang. I meant Timmy Chang. He says, Timmy Chang was a hell of a quarterback for Hawaii, too. Thank you. Appreciate it. Sean's Fox Plays said, the bigger question with Jalen Ramsey, we were talking to Drew about Jalen Ramsey, the best corner of the Dolphins, a lot of people forgetting Howard even exists. Don't forget, also, draft corner and Smith to help out with loss of Ramsey. The issues can Skylar Thompson play when Tua gets knocked out again? Oh, so he's all over about the Dolphins. A lot of people were asking about the Jalen Ramsey thing because he obviously played some safety last year as well. So we'll get into more of those, but we want to talk to Mr. Wishnev from his mom's Cork Attic somewhere in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He is the star of the Megapod, the Beating the Book Megapod that we do all football season, but is known mainly for his in-game college basketball and college football betting. He joins us now. How you doing, Todd?
How are you? I'm not from the Cork Attic. I'm at a friend's house. We're having the floors ripped out at my mom's.
You're in front of a chain link fence, I see, with pictures on it.
It's actually just a living little a dining room wall.
Little green screen maybe happening back there. All right, Todd. So I said before the break, and I said a couple times here on this show, you really are the best in-game college basketball bettor I know. You're able to process possession and pace real quickly, multiple games at the same time. Do some of those sort of tenets exist when you're doing college football, or is there a difference for you?
Well, I mean, there's a difference college football. But, there are some similarities. I mean, for instance, you know, if you have high pace, high scoring early in a college basketball game, a lot of times it's better just to bet the first half over as opposed to the game, because there might be adjustments made at halftime that are going to shift it, or you might not get the fouls that you have. Like, you know, you might be in a college basketball game, you might be at the 15-minute mark and each team has four fouls already and the pace is going crazy. You might as well just bet that game over in the first half, because you're probably going to see that same type of strategy continue for the rest of the first half. And then there might be adjustments made at halftime that would make a bet on the total for the game not as good as a bet on the total for the half. Similarly, in college football, you have situations like, for instance, you have teams that are major mismatches, or even when you just have a high scoring game. Oftentimes, if you can recognize that early in the first quarter of a football game, it's better to just bet the first half stuff rather than the game, because the fourth quarter is going to be played very differently. For example, if Alabama is ahead, you know, 14-0 after 3 minutes in a game against, you know, Alcorn State or some garbage team that they could win by 80 if they wanted to, they're going to call the dogs off, you know, 7 minutes left in the third quarter or 4 minutes left in the third quarter, and then it could kill your over. So a lot of times, like, I would like to bet a team total over in the first half rather than for the full game. And that's kind of similar to in college basketball, where things could get totally different in the second half, whereas in a first half, you know, you have everything going for you, fouls, pace, and, you know, everything that's happening.
Yeah, I mentioned no sport reveals itself quicker, I believe, than college football, whether one team you can recognize is going to be dominant over another. You just talked about that and how you would bet that. What about when both defenses clearly can't stop the other? That's a full game thing for you?
Yeah, that's the same kind of thing. I would still like to do it in the first half and then reconsider at halftime, but oftentimes, you know, that's a perfect example. You're watching the game. It's BYU against Utah State, and it's 14-14 after, you know, 8 minutes, and you're just like, okay, there's not going to be any stops in this game. Just bet the first half over, and then you don't have to worry about if the game changes radically because of halftime adjustments.
Are there certain coaches that have historically just absolutely torpedoed your philosophies on these things? Like, where they're just like, they're supposed to do, you know, what they're supposed to do, and they just refuse to. Luke Fickell leaps to mind, some of those end games in Cincinnati where he just keeps pushing it.
There's certain coaches that Luke Fickell just makes me so angry about what he did in that game against Boston College. I'm still mad about it. You know, running hurry up 38-6 or some nonsense. But yeah, there's not really that much of that. And if you're watching the game, you can kind of see what's happening. But I mean, I'm just giving you we're just talking in generalities, of course, but you know, in general, these kind of things are going to, you know, hold true. You know, Alabama may win the first half 38-0. The final score is going to be 45-7 or 45-3 or something like that, maybe 52-3, but they're not going to, you know, just keep rolling it up. It doesn't typically happen.
Yeah. In college basketball, just as this is anecdotal, you can tell me I'm wrong, but just in observing you, most of your in-game stuff is totals, right? You're more on the pace. You do sides as well, but most of it's totals.
I like the total the best. Yeah.
Yeah. College football is a little more evenly distributed.
Well, I mean, you can play, I like to play team totals. You know, you don't have that. I guess you do you're starting to get that more in Vegas now, but the team, I like to play team totals. Like an example I just gave you, you know, you see one team is just going to just shred this other team. bet that team total over first half, and then you don't have to worry about the point spread, you know, about what their defense is going to do or not. So in a sense, when I'm playing a team total, I'm playing a total, but I'm also playing a directional. But I like to play it with the total rather than with the spread often, because maybe I'm not as sure about their defense, you know. So that's what I like about the fact that you have team totals in game.
Are you do when it comes to totals and pace? I mean, obviously college basketball, it's such a, you know, it's quick math. You've done it on this show before, the amount of possessions teams are having, how that relates to the pre-flop total, how it's actually going. Is there any of that specifically in college football as well for you?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're going to realize, you know, what a number should look like after, you know, you see four possessions in a game that's lined 53 and both teams just went up and down the field. It's 14 all already. That 53 is wrong. It's just wrong. And the algorithm is going to, let's say there's let's just say, for instance, the end of the first quarter, right? The algorithm's going to say, okay, it's approximately one quarter of the game's gone. One quarter of 53 is, you know, let's say, I don't know, around 13 less. So there's probably about 46 points left. I'm sorry, I'm doing that wrong. Let's just use 56. It's easier. 56 would say be 28 points each quarter. So 14 points, but there's been 28 points. Let's say it's the end of the first quarter and it's 14 all. Now, this takes out the fact that second quarters are usually more scoring, but let's just pretend all the quarters were the same for argument's sake, right? If it's 14 all at the half, right, there was 28 points scored. There were supposed to be 14 points scored at that point, right? They're not going, the rest of the algorithm of 42 points for the rest of the game is not going to be correct sometimes. And that's when you can recognize. Now, if it's 14 all in a game when it's SMU against, one of those crazy teams in their conference and the game's line 73, well, 14 all at the end of the first quarter is not so crazy, right? So you obviously have to know, you know, what the line should be versus what you're watching. So there is that concept to it, obviously, but it's not as direct as you see in college basketball, but it's there definitely.
Last two questions. I just need really quick answers. One, are you as good at football as you are at basketball, college, doing this?
I would say college basketball is my number one. College football, I've been very good the last couple of years, doing this. So, yeah, I've been pretty good in the college football, too.
And two, do you prefer to do this quietly in anonymity, or do you prefer to share with a bunch of people?
I might be sharing it on my, on that WhatsApp group that I listed with the college football this year as well.
Right. Got to run. Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it, man.
No problem. Good to see you, Gilly.
You too. Todd Wishnev, everybody. We'll come back with my mishpucha, Chrissy Andrews from the South Point, next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Tormented by the transfer portal. Coaching carousel got you confused? Let our 2023 VSiN College Football Guide get you ready for the upcoming season. This year's College Football Preview magazine includes season win total picks and previews for all 133 FBS teams, plus feature articles on how to create a power ratings model. Ooh, that's cool. Calculate home field advantage and who to bet on for the Heisman. Get Matt Heumann's preseason top 25, Steve Mackinnon's top betting systems, and what you need to know to be ready for kickoff. The College Football Betting Guide comes out Thursday and is one of many benefits to becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. So sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. And once again, if you have not gotten any of our betting guides through the years, whether it's baseball, pro football, college football, whatever it is, NBA, they are awesome. And historically, Matt Heumann, Adam Burke have really spearheaded those. Everybody who contributes does such a great job. And it's out this Thursday, and I would highly recommend it. That segment we just had with Todd Wishnev, I hope that's obviously not in the betting guide, but I hope that also just highlights how in-game betting be the way that you will be the most profitable in college football. So I would say the same for college basketball as well. But if anything, if that segment, you know, sort of achieved its goal, it's just to whet your appetite and get you thinking about that. That really, you know, by nature of sports betting content, we have to talk about things during the week and we have to fill the time. So by definition, it's pre-flop. But really, oftentimes, you know, the money to be made is once you get an opportunity. Listen to this very simple concept. We can pontificate, we can prattle on about what we think is going to happen in a given game, pro or college, come, you know, an upcoming weekend. But in college especially, once you see the two teams on the field for a drive or two, you might just absolutely have to throw out your entire pre-flop notion and realize, oh my God, this is completely different than what I thought it is. Let me not be arrogant about the, you know, this preconceived notion that I have. Let me be humble enough to change and bet accordingly. And I think if you just keep that in mind, it will go a long way towards being profitable in the sport, especially of college football. Speaking of college football, this man has been immersed in his power rankings because he's getting ready to put out games of the year. It's my Mishbucha, Chrissy Andrews, kicking it with Chrissy.
Can I kick it?
Chris Andrews, everybody. He's been in this business, oh, I don't know, 40 plus years.
44.
We used to say 30 plus, remember when we started this?
Yeah.
That's 40 plus.
Can I comment something on that?
Please.
The, you know, in-game stuff?
Yes.
I've seen it over the years. Sometimes a game will take on a life of its own. Mm-hmm. It's like a very zen concept. But, you know, you thought the game was going to be, well, let's say college football. You thought it was going to be, you know, 28-24. And all of a sudden, nobody can stop. And 28-20, that's a pretty high-scoring game, you know. But all of a sudden, you see, these guys ain't staying under 65.
Yes.
Or, you know, you can go the opposite way where every yard is fought for and, you know, we're looking at a 10-7 final, something like that. Not too many of those in college football anymore.
Or you realize what Wishnet was talking about also, which is you just realize, oh, this team is completely outmatched. Like, for at least a half of football. And he was very careful to say that. Like, you have to realize at some point teams are going to take the foot off the pedal on these. But for at least a half of football, if not three quarters, and in some cases with some coaches, will go on uncomfortably long.
Sure.
You just have to bet accordingly, whatever you thought beforehand.
Yeah, but I would also say, too, you know, like I have, you know, some young people come up to me and they ask me, well, how can I kind of get going? And I said, you know, find a market that you could specialize in that's maybe not as broad as like picking the NFL games on Sunday or the college games on Saturday. You know, maybe it's first quarters, you know, first halves. You know, in-game would be one of those ways. You know, trying to find something you could specialize in and still make, like, a decent bet. You know, guys getting started, they're not looking at about 10,000. You know, they're, you know, 200-300, maybe a nickel, something like that. You know, so find something like that that maybe you can, you know, be ahead of the bookmaker. Listen, you know, you just mentioned it. I just did – how many teams are there? I just did season win totals.
133.
I haven't finished my season win totals because I want to put up games of the year first, and then I'm going to adjust my power ratings accordingly. But I did home field advantage for each team. I went back a couple years, and I think you know, that was an exercise. Took some time.
Well, let's put a bookmark in that right now because I want to finish the end game stuff.
Okay.
So Wishnev, who we just had on, Todd Wishnev, sits in this when he was here out in Vegas. He'll sit in that section closest to your office there. We call it the Wishnev section. And the other thing about in game betting is, and this applies to college basketball, college football, is that one book, let's say the set, what you put at the South Point, is going to be vastly different than what's up at another book. And so somebody's wrong, right? There's going to be a much bigger variance in that as a game goes on. And about, you know, you were saying the new bettors who only may want to bet up to $200, $300, maybe even that's a lot. What you will find is the less you bet, the quicker the bet will also go through, right? So that's another thing. You know, a lot of these shops, if you try to bet a dime on an in-game play, you'll get in the spin. And the spin, especially in basketball, the spin is just death because it's like, okay, well, now I don't even, you know, this bet doesn't even really apply. They'll either reject it or then they'll wait to see what happens the next couple possessions. There's that. So sometimes that's not the worst thing in the world to bet little amounts because it does go through quicker. So I just wanted to point out.
And you can bet a lot of times, you know what I mean? You can bet. You know, 10 times during the game easily, you know.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's all kinds of things. It's just I just want the average better to sort of we talk about things in broad terms, either futures or game-by-game pre-flop numbers. But if you're really real-world doing this, in-game betting might really be, I will suggest, the way for you to go. About the home field advantage. So you talk about this in pro football a lot, that through the years – you know, it used to be sort of the default three for every home field. And then people got smarter and are like, wait a minute. Maybe it's not a three for everybody. Right. Now to the point where very few home field advantages exist.
Very few. Yeah. And I think it goes back to Bill Walsh, and the Bill Walsh tree kind of has spread throughout quite a bit in the NFL. When Bill Walsh was with the Niners, you know, of course, he just had a different method on a lot of different things. But one of them was on travel, on how he got the team to travel, you know. And obviously it worked. I mean, Walsh going to, I mean, he's one of the greatest, coaches, certainly one of the greatest innovators in the history of the NFL. So it really changed not just home field advantage, but how the road team is not at a disadvantage, you know, if they follow like his script, which that's a lot of teams have done.
That's right. Travel is really what we're talking about more than anything, because usually when you say home field advantage, the immediate snapshot in a person's brain is, oh, it's so loud.
Yeah.
You know, that, you, oh, what a, it really charges up the home team. It's really about travel more than anything. What was your sort of discovery with doing this analysis in college football?
Well, some teams, it's almost like a zero. You know, and other teams, you know, and listen, I mean, I'm going to try to pick a team. Let's say Georgia. Georgia did not have that big of a home field advantage. Why? Because they win everywhere
they're
they
just,
go.
They're just good everywhere.
They're just good, yeah. I mean, if they go into, you know, well, Florida, they always play in a neutral. But if they go into Bama or they go into, you know, just pick any school in the SEC, Tennessee, you know, Kentucky, whatever, they still win a bunch of those games and by large margins. So their home field advantage, I mean, they still have one, you know, but I think Georgia, if I remember correctly, their home field advantage was just 3. And Penn State for years, I always had them as like a 5-point home field advantage, which is big.
Wow.
But I've reduced it this year because, you know, they are pretty good on the road now. You know, so it's not just that they blow teams out at home. You know, and there's just different schools. And, you know, some schools are kind of hard to power rate. You know, like take Iowa's one I use for an example. They win a lot of games, but they don't win by much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how do you put a power rating on them?
They're so difficult because so bad offensively, Iowa. But yet they manage to win 8 games every year.
I mean, they might win 10-7. Right. They're a team that might do that, you know. But, you know, but like I said, what does that do to your power rating? So they're a hard one for me. You know, but there's others. But like I said, I went through this year and I did an exhaustive study on home field advantage. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, things do change year to year in college. Well, in all football, but certainly in college.
I don't usually ask you about a specific team and your thoughts, but you are a Penn State guy.
I am, yeah.
Listen, all the projections have them.
Yeah, they're really good.
Maybe not quite as good as Michigan and Ohio State, but like a notch below it, if even that.
Not too many notches below.
Yeah.
They're kind of right there.
Where did you have them power ranked in your whole assessment?
Overall, with everybody?
Do you remember?
Oh God, I don't know exactly, but I do have them, I want to say, 2 points under Michigan and only 1 point under Ohio State. I think Ohio State slipped a little. Listen, there's... Yeah. You know, 128 teams in college football that would love to have Ohio State's problems, but I think they've slipped a little bit.
When do your games of the year come out? This week, right?
Friday, yeah.
Friday.
Yeah.
Take it all comers.
Sure.
And you, and we've said this before, you will inevitably, well, how many games constitute your games of the year usually?
Well, I tell you what, I cut it down this year. Last year I did 100. This year I did 75, because I'll tell you why.
Wow.
That's
a lot of games.
It's still a lot of games, but I cut out like the, you know, the non-Power Fives. I used to use a lot of the non-Power Fives because I'd have a game, oh, this is really interesting, like, to me. But to the general public, nobody even looked at it. You know what I mean? One of those deals. So I cut down. I still have a couple non-Power Five games up there. But most of them I involve Power Five teams.
And like with that Notre Dame-Michigan game a couple years ago, that you were 7 points off market, you're inevitably, with that many games, there's going to be some, maybe not 7 points off, but there's going to be a game or two that's going to be way
off. Find, you know, guys are going to find some bargains out there. Paul Stone's flying in.
Bargains are available.
Bargains are, you know, and then, you know, like that was one game I happened to be right. But last year, you know, the transfer portal, I didn't follow it nearly as closely as I should have.
All right. More college football talk and beyond with Chrissy Andrews, the proprietor of the South Point Hotel Sportsbook. On the other side, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM rewards points that you can use to source dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please, as always, gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800 Gambler. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beanie the Book. Drew got a lot of pushback on the Jalen Ramsey thing, like a bunch of tweets on that. Just read a couple. He said, Drew, please explain high rating for Ramsey. He became a safety last year as he couldn't cover guys like Evans and Metcalf the last few years. They only got a seventh round pick for him. And Drew responds in kind as to why he has that. He also got one from Rich PSM. He never covered anyone decent on the Rams. He wasn't that old then. Wooten Hall looked way better last year. Another foolish trade by Snead and giving that much. I watched closely, expecting way more. This playoff game against Evans almost cost them the Super Bowl. And then a lot of love for Todd Wishnev. Oh, yeah. Teasers and parlays. Great segment on VEASAN with Todd and Gil currently. Todd is one of the best in-game bettors out there and provides great tidbits if you are getting into live betting. One loss from retirement tweets. Outstanding segment there with Todd. First half betting is much more of a pure handicap. College hoops can get you some really good 3 to 7 point middles. Great first quarter slash first half totals also in college football and the NFL. And Elvis Toast Patterson, Gilly, having Todd on the radio side of things is an absolute treasure. Yes, indeed. Oh, Ian McDonald with this one. He says, or Iowa could win 7-3 with a field goal and two safeties versus a 1-AA team. That is true. That's true as well.
I still remember the 6-4 final over Penn State all those years ago.
So I just want to point out also for people, so there's a couple questions in there we didn't ask, like, who do you have all your power rankings better than the consensus? Who do you have worse? You obviously don't want to talk about that necessarily.
Not yet, no.
And as far as who has the best home field advantage, you have a few teams at the top, but you're not, you can't really recollect.
I can't remember. I wouldn't mind telling you. I just don't remember. I have Bama at a 5. I know that one.
Yeah.
Okay. But I can't remember. And like I said, I lowered Penn State. I've had them a 5 all these years, and then I lowered them to a 4 this year.
Kelly and I just didn't want them thinking that we weren't doing our job here as a follow-up on these. You do have books that are out that we should mention.
Oh, do I? Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Then Which, one day.
Then one day.
That's still selling really well. Then 1 year. I knew that was never going to sell that well, but for guys in the business, they really like it. You know, it talks about the daily life of a bookmaker, and it just happened to be the worst year of all time that I could pick to do that, 2020.
Kelly, you know who came up with the title for Then 1 Year? Do you know who?
Gil Alexander.
No.
Really? No. Who?
Producer number 7, Jason the Wrath of Khan.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go,
yeah,
Jason.
Good,
all right.
Good title.
Yeah.
Then, of course, my novel, Adel Fosmu, which I have.
Adel Fosmu, Kelly.
Yeah.
Jason came up with that, too?
No, he did not.
No. The general rule in Greek is wherever you think whatever syllable you think should be accented, you're wrong. Pick one of the other ones. But I have that pinned on my Twitter, so you can find that on Amazon. Very easy to get.
And this next one that you are concocting right now is sort of a follow-up to Then One Day.
Yeah, yeah. And I tried to get it done by football. I just couldn't get it done.
Yeah.
You know,
how dare you.
Yeah, well, that's the way it goes.
Will you also, speaking of college football, in addition to the games of the year, are you also doing that thing that you and Vinny have done for many years now? I'd say you've done it for 6 years, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Which is the very simple prop bet at the beginning of the year. You've changed it through the years.
I've changed it a couple times over the years just to keep it a little different, a little bit fresh. But we'll pick a couple of teams, you know, and group them and then have a field. You know, so we'll try to come up with something. I'm not ready yet. You know, I want to get through these next couple of weeks. I want to get through my games of the year and my season win totals. By the way, our season win totals, we do conference games only.
Only you do. That's a pandemic creation, correct?
It was, but it also gave us a little bit of a unique thing that we do here. Nobody else that I know of does that, you know? So, like I said, it's a little bit unique to the South Point, and, you know, we don't mind doing it that way. Still, we get a lot of action on that, ton of it.
Takes Alabama versus Brandeis off the board, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
For people who are wondering about the props thing, it essentially is like, and I'm just going to make it up, this is not what you have, but you'll take an Ohio State, USC, you'll basically try to weight them in a way where there's a couple enticing teams in each one of those buckets.
Right.
For the national title.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, the reason that I enjoy that, and I keep getting back to this, is the first time you did it.
Yeah.
And I think we can name them now. Yeah. We didn't at the time.
Right.
But you had like a Chris Felica on one side. You had a Joe Pito on the other.
And right then I said, I guess I got a good number.
I guess you got a good number. Because they were like really passionate arguments on each side.
And I think I only had two choices.
You only had two at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as soon as, like I said, Joe, who I respect, Chris, who I very much respect, two different guys bet me decent amount of money. I stumbled into the right number here. What do you know?
Yeah. Joe has a new book coming out, but we'll talk about that later in the month. He's the guy who did Trading Bases and then the Masters Tour.
Yeah.
God, he's got another book coming out, which is awesome. So good for both of you to transition into this life as an author. Do you think what do you think you do later in life? Come to the South Point every day or write? What
I'd like
ends
to do
first?
Both. I don't know. Hopefully neither.
I'm not trying to will one of
yeah,
them.
I always kid Michael, you're going to take me out of here in a coffin. That's the only way
what
I'm
is,
getting out.
What does your wife want to end first?
Whew. Probably the writing, because I do that at home a lot, and while she's watching a soap opera or something.
Yeah. True crime.
Yeah.
Okay, so besides college football, which obviously the guide coming out this Thursday we're all pumped about, NFL preseason upon us. Hall of Fame game. Do you get bet a lot on that?
No, and I liked it better in the old days, Gil, like when we were kids. Didn't they used to have six preseason games?
Six. It was forever.
Yeah, I know, and that was a little ridiculous. Yeah. But they'd have, first week, okay, the starters played, one or two drives, that was it. But by, week six, everybody was playing, at least that first three quarters,
Or even when we had four, remember the Dr. Bob trend?
Even when we had four, yeah.
Where it was like every team could be counted on playing everybody week three and ratcheting it back week four.
Right.
Now we don't know anything.
We don't know anything. And I remember, I lived for many years in northern Nevada, and you'd see Joe Montana the first quarter. And then Steve Young would be the second quarter into the third quarter, and then Steve Bono would come in after that. I mean, these were pretty good football players.
Steve Bono, that's right.
Yeah, he was a good ball player.
By the way, the Dr. Bob thing, I messed that up. There was the thing with everyone played week three, but didn't week four. But part of that was with that 4-week trajectory. He also had this unbelievable trend where if you lost week one and then you were playing a team that had won week one and week two, it was this incredible ATS thing.
It was,
But with three games, that doesn't apply anymore.
Just all those things. And I remember Tony Dorsett's backup, Sean Springs.
Ron Springs.
Ron Springs.
Yeah.
Who was...
Sean Springs was a Seahawk in skin.
Yeah. I know a guy named Ron Spring.
Yeah.
Or Sean Spring. Yeah. I'm sorry. Anyway, you'd see him, and he was like Mr. August every year. He was a great player.
Babe Laufenberg.
There's a bunch of guys like that. But you kind of knew the rotation, and you could bet accordingly because, you knew. Like, Laufenberg was a pretty good backup quarterback. Cliff Stout, who later became... Stiff clout to Pittsburgh fans was a pretty
number
good
18, as I recall.
Number 18, got his pension without ever taking a snap.
I didn't know they called him that.
That's when he played for the Maulers.
but that's interesting to me because we will listen.
I take that back. He played for Birmingham. He came into Pittsburgh to play the Maulers, and there was a sign up made me laugh so hard.
This was USFL. So the original USFL. So that's interesting to me because we will inevitably be talking about preseason. We don't so much on this show, like I think other shows do, who really get into it. Because some people really love betting preseason football. And it's an information. It's a Google thing.
Definitely.
It's a Google contest. If you can figure out what teams are going to do, then, more power to you. But you just genuinely don't get that much action on it.
Depends on the game. I've told you before, Gil, and I point this out a couple of times. Not very often, but a couple of times. We'll do more in a preseason game than we will on a World Series game. If the numbers come out and there's Green Bay's going to play all their starters. No, wait a second. Dallas is going to play all their starters, and then we get all this.
Well, remember that first Sunday night that they put because the Hall of Fame game wasn't always on a Sunday night, but when they first put it on Sunday night, that day I remember Cantor Gaming or whatever saying that their handle on the Hall of Fame game exceeded the entire 15-game MLB slate.
Yeah.
That just gives you an idea.
No, I know. Like I said, there's days where we've had more on these games than we do on a World Series game, which is ridiculous.
It's that time of year, baby. Football.
I love football.
That's what moves the needle still.
Yeah, but not these other little leagues. That's not moving much.
It moves, but, doesn't pin the needle. Let's put it that way. Chrissy Andrews, everybody, by Mishpucha. Thanks for listening. Lombardi Line is next. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.